Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, more of your messages still coming in on pigeons, first aid and concussion. We may get to some of them in a while, but first, more than 11,000 knives have been seized by An Garda Síochána since 2020, with the highest number recorded in the north and south inner city areas of Dublin. New figures show an average of more than 2,000 knives a year being seized by Gardaí between 2020 and 2024. It comes as, in the UK, the Met Police has shown they've had 15,000 incidents of knife crime in the British capital. So what are the Gardaí currently doing to deal with the issue? How is it viewed by the force? And is there anything that can be learned from the UK that may help how we treat the issue here? Well, for more on this, we're joined by Conor Lally, crime correspondent with the Irish Times, and Patrick Green, CEO of the Ben Kinsella Trust, an anti-knife crime charity based in the UK. Conor, I'll go to you first. We've had a number of high-profile incidents in the city where knives have been used. But when it comes to the numbers, what are they actually like?
Well, I suppose what we've seen, and it's been stable really for quite a number of years, we've seen across the country there have been around 2,200 knife seizures per year, really for about the last 4 or 6 years. Now, if we go back a little further, Colm, to about 2016, we see a very big increase over about a 2 or 3 year period from 2016 really through until the end of 2019. And at first glance, that may be a cause for concern, and it obviously is. But what happened at that stage was the Gardaí overhauled their storage and counting system at that point. They put a big investment into a better storage system for all of the items that they seized throughout the country. And that really resulted in items being seized being better stored and obviously counted then far more accurately. So certainly people that you speak to within An Garda Síochána, they will attribute that big increase for those couple of years from 2016 to these improvements in item storage and counting. And then really the figures more or less evened off then in the 5 or 6 year period since then. And as we say, we've had between about 2,000 and about 2,200 knives seized per year. It does have to be said, though, in the first half of 2025, the numbers are a bit higher. And if they were sustained for the remainder of the year, for the second half of the year, you'd be looking at an increase in the order of about 10%. And that would be quite high.
So the first part, as you say, is just better data on how many knives are seized and in storage. But that increase there, is it known what's given rise to that? Is it a more proactive anti-knife policing effort? Or is it just there are more knives on the streets?
It's very, very hard to know. I mean, knives are one of these items. They're a bit like, you know, drugs or even trying to catch people drink driving. The more you look, the more you'll find. So the more guarded checkpoints you do, the more people you'll catch drink driving. The more searches you do, the more drugs you'll find. Knives are a bit like that. If you really increase proactive policing, and that is primarily stopping and searching people on the streets, the more of that you do, the more knives you'll find. And really, we see that kind of activity will increase as the overall number of Gardaí increases. Now, what we've seen, I suppose, over the last year, finally, is a marginal increase in the number of Gardaí in the force. So 12 months ago, we had about 14,100 guards. Now we've got about 14,300. So some of that increase in knife seizures over the last 6 to 12 months is probably down to the fact that we've got a few more Gardaí on the streets. They have, a lot of those extra resources have also gone into high visibility patrols in the north inner city and south inner city. And that is where I think we are seeing these increases in seizures taking place.
And Conor, do you know, are they looking for knives, or is it in the course of a search where maybe they have reason to believe somebody is in possession of drugs that they search them for that and then the knife turns up? Do we have that level of data as to how the knives are being turned up?
No, we don't really have that level of data, to be honest, Colm. I mean, what the guards will do is they'll see people hanging around that they're not happy with. They may be in an area for a, you know, prolonged period of time. The guards may form the view that they're involved in either on-street drug dealing, maybe even shoplifting, that kind of thing, and they will stop and search these people. And very often when they stop and search them, they'll find, you know, several items on them. They may find a quantity of drugs. They may find, you know, several telephones, and they could also find a knife.
Right.
So sometimes you will have a, you know, group of items, if you like, being carried by these people that are stopped and searched by the guards.
So carrying them is one thing, using them is another. I mean, injury statistics as a result of knives, does that give us any clearer an insight into how the use of knives has changed over the years?
Yeah, I think that probably does. And I think that's probably more accurate even than the Garda stats, because a lot of factors, as I say, can influence those Garda stats. But if you look at the HSE data, the HSE compiles a set of data every year where people are treated in hospital for injuries that have been sustained during an attack by a person using a knife. And if we look at those injury stats, there were 170 people treated last year for those kinds of injuries. That's down about 25 cases on the previous year. And if we go back to the Celtic Tiger period in 2006, we had 260 people treated for those injuries in hospitals during that year. So again, the HSE data, when you combine it with the Garda data, it seems to show that there is, you know, a relatively problematic issue of people carrying knives on the streets, but it's not translating into more people being injured during attacks when these knives are being used.
And yet, in terms of the general crime statistics, you know, there has been this ongoing perception of Dublin as a dangerous place. It's not really borne out by the crime statistics. And I suppose the seizure of knives, those numbers that you're talking about, may also give people cause for alarm. Are people just more aware of it then, if the statistics show that more people aren't being injured?
Yeah, I can't help but think what's happening is that you will get these high-profile incidents. A lot of people will then take out their phones, they will record these incidents, and they will really be shared from all angles for a period of a week or two. And I suppose people are bombarded then by these images that it's a really dangerous place, that there's lots of, you know, violent attacks going on, and so on. But I think that what's happening is, if you look at the volume of content that's on social at the moment and you compare it to, say, 5 or 10 years ago, there's just a much higher volume of it now. So it's far more in your face now, and people believe they're getting more examples of more crimes taking place on the streets. But really all they're seeing is more clips being broadcast, because people are just more inclined to take their phones out of their pockets now when they see any form of Garda activity on the streets. They will record that incident and they'll then broadcast it at a frequency that they weren't broadcasting it, say, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. So I think people's perception has been very much influenced by social media.
OK, well, Patrick Green, the CEO of the Ben Kinsella Trust, has been listening to you on the line there. Patrick, in a couple of sentences, can you tell us what the Trust does?
Yeah, the Trust was set up 17 years ago following the murder of Ben. Ben was a 16-year-old schoolboy who'd just completed his GCSEs, the equivalent of his intercert in Ireland, gone out for a night with friends to celebrate to a venue he'd been to before, and was murdered by three strangers in an unprovoked attack. Ben's story is every parent's nightmare. Your child goes out for a night out with friends and just never returns. And we set up the charity following Ben's murder to do one thing, to try and stop what happened to Ben's family happening to anybody else.
Now, in the UK, in London in particular, I think 15,000 incidents of knife crime last year. Does knife crime include possession, or is that use of knives?
Those figures would be the more serious offences, so they wouldn't include possessions. So they're likely to be robberies where a knife is used or intimated, an injury resulting from a knife attack. So they are the more serious offences.
And the phenomenon that Connor was talking about of people videoing them and putting them online, does this give rise to a perception that, you know, people who may be inclined to carry a knife or may not be at that stage form the view themselves that they'd better carry a knife?
Exactly. I mean, social media has been one of the big drivers of knife crime in recent years. It's particularly in the UK, it normalizes knife crime. It's because you're seeing it on your feeds all the time. The algorithm will pick up that you're watching this content and will send you more of this content. And it's, you know, it often glamorizes knife crime, and it desensitizes you to knife crime, and it increases the fear. And what we see particularly with young people is the fear of knife crime is hugely disproportionate to the levels of knife crime that exist. And for many young people, they make the decision that if people are carrying knives out there, they too much must carry a knife to protect themselves, visualizing that they have a knife, they will be able to protect themselves. And, you know, that's exactly the opposite happens. It puts you at greater risk. So, you know, the fear of knife crime is a driver and is something that needs to be addressed.
So when you're getting into trying to turn the tide on a knife culture that grows up for whatever reason, you know, people thinking they need to carry a knife to protect themselves and people who have a more aggressive intent, whether that's, you know, robbery or anything else, where do you begin trying to reverse that trend, given that we're not where the UK is at now?
And the UK is a really good example for Ireland. Between, you know, so if we you just, compare what's happened in England and Wales to what happened in Scotland.
I'm sorry to cut across you there,
England,
Patrick.
England and Wales, knife crime has gone up over, you know, by 80% over the last 10 years. In Scotland, you know, violent incidents, including knife crime, has been falling. Two different approaches taken. In England and Wales, it was a focus predominantly on criminal justice interventions, you know, new laws restrictions on the public in terms of policy. Not that they don't work, but there was the only thing that was tried. The idea that you don't look at preventative, you're reacting all the time and not doing any preventative work, was being, you know, cited as one of the failures for England and Wales. Where in Scotland, the exact opposite approach was taken. What's often referred to as a public health approach, where you start to look at violence and particularly knife crime like an epidemic. Because once the numbers start to rise, and this is probably an area that of concern, particularly in Ireland, is once those numbers start to go up, it's incredibly difficult to get them back down again, because that spiral just seems to happen, just like in an epidemic. And, you know, a public health approach, not just policing, but actually tackling the root causes that are driving that, which sometimes are societal issues, sometimes involve health, housing, and grassroots organizations working on the front line, particularly with young people, hugely important.
Where do you access
success in Scotland? And I think these are the things for Ireland to consider as it looks about how it lowers down these high numbers of possessions.
I don't know whether you can are you able to hear me, Patrick?
I am, yes.
Oh, sorry. Apologies for that. Where do you access young people? Because the perception may be that, you know, people involved in violent knife crime may be also involved in drug gangs. They may not be fully engaged in schools or the like. So what are the most effective channels to get at people in a preventative way? Or if they have embarked on the first steps in the road to knife crime, where do you access them in order to try and engage in some of these mitigation measures that were successful in Scotland?
Yeah, there's a multitude of approaches that are needed. And, you know, this is why the simple answer, you know, is the wrong answer. Often for those young people who are, you know, caught up in criminality or being exploited, which is essentially what's happening here. Often, you know, if, as Connor said in his earlier piece, you know, when people are arrested, they have drugs on them, they have a knife on them. Drug dealers will often give young people who are dealing drugs a knife, not to protect themselves, but to protect the drugs. You know, we have young people who are being exploited, and they're being exploited for various reasons. So, you know, mentoring, work with young people to address those issues that have led them to being exploited is really important. But going further upstream, you know, helping young people understand, particularly at a very very early age, that carrying a knife doesn't protect you. It may sound like a very obvious statement, but when we surveyed 9,500 young Londoners last year, and I'm talking young, I'm talking 10, 11, and 12, a high number of them, one in four of them, thought you carry a knife to protect yourself. You know, and that just shows you what young people pick up from social media and from peers, and why having these conversations with young people is very important. Right. And it's why, you know, on our website we've got lots of resources for parents to start that conversation.
Any advice for Dublin? I mean, you're no stranger to the city, so
no.
Any advice for Dublin, where it's at?
Yeah, I mean, I think as you point out, these numbers need to be taken seriously in terms of the volume and the fact that they're starting to creep up. And as an approach, I think, you know, if, you know, what I've seen work really well and is starting to work here in the UK is a high-level approach from government. We have a prime minister who set up a coalition to tackle knife crime, bringing the police, grassroots organisations, campaigners together and setting a target. To reduce knife crime. In the UK, that target is to reduce it by 50% over the next 10 years. That gives a focus. And I think, you know, it does need that high-level leadership and focus to bring those numbers down.
All right, Patrick, thanks very much for that. Conor, very briefly, do we know what the strategy is here and whether international examples are being looked at to try and nip it in the bud at the early stage?
I mean, we don't really have a huge strategy here, to be quite honest with you. I mean, we did have a knife amnesty quite some time ago, but it was well over a decade ago, and that was the big idea back then. I don't think the numbers have increased in any one year that would give rise to the level of concern that would result in a particular strategy.
Okay.
But it has to be said, if the increase in knife seizures from the first half of the year were to increase, as I say, to the end of the year, I think that concern may be there and we may have to start coming up with some ideas at that stage. But I think now it's really the guards are just trying to keep at it, you know, certain people that they suspect are carrying contraband, and that seems to be the main tactic at the moment from a policing point of view.
Okay, Conor Lally, crime correspondent with the Irish Times, and Patrick Green, CEO of the Ben Kinsella Trust, who you heard earlier. You can't get in too early on that as far as what he's saying. Now, coming up a little later, the Waterford Librarians will be in here with some book recommendations for all ages and abilities. But next, Brian O'Connell on the private archive covering a century of the Kingdom's history.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.